going on? Jermaine Johnson. Tune in to Turn on the Jets podcast.
Hey, this is Vinny Pasquantino of the Kansas City Royals. Make sure you tune into the Turn on the Jets podcast.
Everybody, welcome back to the Turn the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPaul11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. A rainy Thursday here in New York. May the 4th be with you, obviously.
That's right.
Little Star Wars action. Everyone knows I'm a big Star Wars guy. Happy to have joined by Field Yates of ESPN. Field, we got to meet in Indy. Glad to get you to take some time.
Yeah, and I think, if my memory is correct, we were like, hey, we're going to huddle up, but let's let the Aaron Rodgers thing figure itself out. Not realizing it was going to take, three more months or 2.5 more months when we had that conversation. So I'm glad that situation did come to a close and that we have the finality that we knew was going to happen. It just took forever. And I got to tell you, at one point down the stretch, before Aaron Rodgers was officially traded, I started to tell people that every day felt like a month, right? So that 2 weeks before the trade, that took like years off my life waiting for the Aaron Rodgers deal to finally go down. Even if we all knew it was going to happen, it was a matter of when, not a matter of if.
No, it was, listen, I mean, I don't know how much more of your Twitter feed was like that, but my Twitter feed every day, it was leverage, and then more leverage. And it was former Packer people saying the Jets have no leverage. It was former Jets people saying it was nauseating, honestly. And I'm really glad it's over. Packers Twitter seems to be still quite upset. They got very angry yesterday at Randall Cobb, and now Randall Cobb apparently sucks. So glad Packers fans aren't salty at all. But I guess I want to just kind of start with the trade overall, because the compensation went back and forth, right? For it felt like we're talking about in February, maybe 2 twos, maybe it's a one. What's it going to be? It ends up technically a pick swap, and 2 twos, it's probably going to become a one. If it doesn't become a one, something's probably gone wrong. What do you think of the compensation, I guess, overall? Was it something that you felt like was fair? Were you a little surprised? The pick swap to me and the 2 twos kind of felt like a little surprising. But again, if he plays 2 or 3 years, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, no, I think it's 100% worth it. First of all, even if he plays just for one season, I know Jets fans probably don't want to hear that, but I have not sensed this much enthusiasm from a fan base in a long time, maybe the entirety of my lifetime. I'm 36, so I didn't see the Joe Namath days, obviously, but this is the most fired up I've seen Jets fans in a long time. And, you know, I know that you use the word leverage, and because there was a perceived lack of leverage on the Packers side, people in my life that are Jets fans started to talk about the sort of the fantasy of like getting Aaron Rodgers for pennies on the dollar. And I think the reality is that that was never going to happen. There's been too many quarterback trades in recent years, and not that all quarterback trades directly influence the other, but they do set a somewhat, a sort of a semi-template. And because we saw the Matthew Stafford deal for basically 3 first-round picks, along with Jared Goff, Stafford for Goff and 2 additional first-round picks and a pick swap, like, I know that that trade feels different now than it did 2 years ago, but the Rams paid that price and won the Super Bowl, and they felt great about it. So I think that the reality for this deal was it was never going to be a bargain. It's not just because of the fact that it's a quarterback involved, but these are negotiations between 2 of 32 franchises, and you can't hide from the Packers, or the Packers can't hide from the Jets for the eternity of the NFL beyond this, right? There is something to be said for relationship management. And if this becomes something that ends in no deal being consummated, then all of a sudden you get 2 franchises that are going to have to deal with each other again in the future and will have a very different view of each other. So I thought the compensation was about in line with what I expected. And as you said, this is almost assuredly a first round pick going to the Packers in 2024. But to me, that's fine. Like, look at the opportunity cost for the Jets. If it isn't Aaron Rodgers, who is it right now that's their starting quarterback? Is it a pursuit of Ryan Tannehill right now? Look at the available free agent quarterbacks at the moment. It's not a particularly inspiring list. I thought the opportunity cost that the Jets had on their hands made it clear to me that it was going to be a fairly significant price paid to the Green Bay Packers, and generally speaking, a 4-time NFL MVP and Super Bowl winner should command a fairly significant price.
Yeah, look, I think people were like, oh, maybe you go for the Darnold package. And it was like, that'd be, I mean, I just, it got to the point
how?
Where it was,
you know,
how is that possible? Age, yeah.
Right. You know, he's obviously Aaron's what, 15, 16 years older now than Sam was when he got traded. But that was an organization in Carolina that I don't think that had a track record of success that is on par with what the Packers have done for the past 30 years. And the Panthers, that trade was like almost inexplicable from the moment it went down. And not just because of the picks involved, but also because of the fact that they were picking eighth in a draft that had what we thought would be five first round quarterbacks. It ended up being five quarterbacks taken in the first 15 picks. And they could have, based off how the draft unfolded, had Justin Fields or Mac Jones. And I think that looking back on it right now, they probably would have preferred that at the time. And maybe Bryce Young will render it all moot. But given everything they've done since that Sam Darnold trade, which included paying Cam Newton $6 million fully guaranteed plus more, and then trading for Baker Mayfield, I think if Carolina could redo it, they would have bypassed that trade. That one felt odd from the jump. This Packers-Jets trade felt to me in line with what you should be paying for a quarterback of Aaron's caliber.
Yeah, look, and I think if you look at it, Packers fans seemed happy with the compensation. They feel like, okay, we got multiple picks. We ended up drafting every athletic white dude in the draft, and it was comical, it was funny and whatever. And then, you know, the Jets fans feel great. They have Super Bowl aspirations. Aaron's at MSG. He's at Carbone. He's doing all these different things, and he's like ingratiating himself into the New York culture. I guess you kind of made a point there that I wanted to ask you, and the arms race that is the AFC, right? Like the quarterback situation. You know, I know Kyle Brandt's tears list went viral yesterday, and knowing Kyle as well as I do, I'm sure that was partially to
part
get people.
Part of it was by design.
Partially was by design.
May 4th, we got to have some stuff.
I
know,
I was
going to
say
now,
people
right?
People still fall for bait sometimes.
That
said, I think you made a point there that, you know, the expectations for the Jets. I thought the most impressive thing Rodgers said in his presser, and then he said on the million interviews he did after, he didn't back down from the Super Bowl aspirations. He's a lot of times he kind of leaves there a window for him to be like, you know, to skate around a certain issue or a topic. He didn't do that with that. You know, there's other things I'm sure people can get mad at him about. He was like, no, I'm here to win a Super Bowl and multiple Super Bowls or whatever. I guess, A, were you impressed by that he kind of went out and didn't say, oh, you know what, longest playoff drought in football. Let's just go make the playoffs and see what happens.
Yeah.
Be impressed he attacked the Super Bowl thing. And is it fair to expect this team to compete for a Super Bowl? Because, again, if you take the Jets logo off, I feel like more people will be like, this is a Super Bowl caliber team. I just think there's a lot of like, we haven't seen this team be good in literally over a decade. So it's kind of hard for me to buy in a Super Bowl in year one.
Yeah, I thought it was self-aware by Rodgers to note that the Super Bowl is the expectation now. And I think fair or unfair, it is. And I think that's how you're going to define success. You know, we do NFL Live or any of the shows that I do. Oftentimes, like one of the questions that is posed in our pre-show meetings is like, how do you define success? And I often find it to be a very subjective question, right? If you're looking at CJ Stroud in Houston this year, what defines success? I don't know. Like, my answer probably would be that sometimes I think with quarterbacks, you know, a franchise quarterback or at least a high level quarterback when you see it. And you know the opposite of that also when you see it. I know the eye test is as subjective of a test as we have, but I often find myself saying when I go through and watch a game, that's a keeper, that's not a keeper, right? And there definitely is some gray area. You've got veterans like, as an example, Kirk Cousins, who maybe sort of flirts in between those two realities. And you've got young players who you don't totally know yet. You're not ready to kind of count them out, but you're also not certain they're going to be great. Those do exist in the NFL, but I think with the Jets, success is very clearly defined. I don't think if 10 years from now, you and I are doing this show again and some other quarterback has been traded to the Jets and we say, remember the time the Jets went 11-6, made the playoffs and then lost to the Bills in round one? That was awesome. That's not going to be your memory of this, right? When you acquire a four-time NFL MVP, I think, and maybe I should ask you, do you believe success in this trade is tied to either appearing or winning the Super Bowl, appearing in or winning the Super Bowl? Because at least in my mind, that is the definition of a win or a loss of this trade.
Yeah, I think I go back and forth. Going back and forth, I still think the expectation at a minimum is host a playoff game. They have not hosted a playoff game in 22 years.
Yeah.
I think that means you win the division. You're in round two. It means you're two wins away from the Super Bowl. They've never won 13 games. I think things like that. But I look back at the Brett Favre trade, right? And they were 8-3. They probably were the favorite to win the Super Bowl that year. Like, they went into Tennessee, who was 9-1 or 10-0. I forget. They smoked Tennessee. They they beat the Cardinals by 1,000 points. And you're like, wow, this team could win the Super Bowl. They won one of their next six games, or one of their next five games. Brett Favre moves on to Minnesota. Minnesota's in the title game next year. That trade's deemed a failure, even if, like, it wasn't actually bad. I think if they get to the Super Bowl and they don't win it, I think conference championship game at a bare minimum, but you still probably, now I'm thinking about it, I don't know. It's like, would I consider
I'd probably meet you there.
Yeah.
I'd probably meet you there. Like, if they go to the, so I think there are ways.
If they lose an Arrowhead 27-24, sure. Like, you could say, you know what, they lost the best quarterback the last 20 years.
Yeah. And by the way, if this is a multi-year run where you're in the mix, right? Like, if this is a one-year thing and Aaron has acknowledged that he's not sure what the life of 2024 looks like for him, whether it's playing football, whether it's playing hosting Jeopardy, whether it's just living his life normally on the beach in California and never talking to any of us again. If it's a 2-year window, maybe if it's a 3 or 4 year window, I think it does sort of change things. If it's 3 or 4 years and you don't win the Super Bowl, then I think it's probably a different conversation, right? If it's 1 or 2 years and it's like, hey, made the conference championship in year one, year two. I mean, think about the Bills over the past couple of years and how that the tenor of their seasons have felt. When it's like they've lost to the Bengals and the Chiefs in back-to-back years in the divisional round. And, you know, I try to take the pulse of fan bases every offseason, and maybe it changed a bit now as we've gotten further away from it. But Bills fans in like February were down bad. Like, this team has got, you know, there's a chemical imbalance within this roster. And like, does Stephon Diggs want to be traded? Is he subtweeting? Is he not subtweeting? Like, is Josh Allen like not it? I'm like, geez, I'm like, zip over to Arizona right now and ask them what they would do to have a roster like the Buffalo Bills at this moment. So I think probably defining success is in part defined by how many years he ends up playing. But I think the trickiest part of the evaluation for the Aaron Rodgers trade, it's not Rodgers himself and really not the Jets roster in a lot of ways itself, even if there are a couple of holes that I do think are probably ones to keep an eye on right now. It's the AFC feels like where the NBA's Western Conference was for a long time, right? Like, Shaq and Kobe had their run through the Western Conference in which they were making everybody else look completely irrelevant. But then there's been like years in which it's like, this is an obscure analogy. And if there are listeners who are like, I don't know a thing about the NBA. So like Marc Gasol and Mike Conley are recognized as maybe, and John Morant could rewrite this story later, but like maybe the two best players in Grizzlies basketball history, maybe like two of the top three or four, whatever they are, right? They're up there. And it's like, those guys had some remarkable seasons, like remarkable seasons. And it was like, there were years and like they're either barely surviving the first round or like getting bounced in the first round, right? Like the Jazz had to break up Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert because they couldn't make a deep push. Dame Lillard has never won a conference finals game. Right? I think he made it there once and got swept. Again, this is my too long obscure analogy to point out that in the AFC next year, like without blinking, I'm going to start naming good quarterbacks that aren't Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. There's five without blinking my eyes, right? And it's like, you have a good quarterback, you have a chance. And so there are, I would argue right now, there are probably 12 of the 16 teams at minimum that think they're going to the playoffs next year. Maybe the number is more like 11, but still, there are 11, 12 teams that believe they are playoff teams next year, which if that's the case, five teams who are going to go home disappointed. And that's assuming that things go as expected, which they never do in the NFL. So for the Jets, the big challenge is not, are they good? It's in a one-game elimination series. Can you go toe-to-toe with the very best, possibly on the road, possibly at home, and take care of business? And that's going to be the challenge for not just the Jets, by the way, it's a challenge for all these teams. You know, the Bills are in a critical year because of that, because of bitter disappointment in the playoffs the past two seasons. So the AFC is compelling for that exact reason.
Yeah, look, I was going to say the NBA thing, if you look at the quarterback list on the NFC and the AFC, used to be the Western Conference, Eastern Conference, All-Star games in like 2000 to like 2007. It was like nine of the 12 best guys were all in one conference, and the All-Star game was just non-competitive. It was like Vince Carter's the second best guy in the East. Shaq and Kobe are like, and Tim Duncan are all on one team. I also kind of like in the AFC East this year a little bit too. The American League East early in the 2000s, where the Yankees and the Red Sox were both like, we should win the title, like no question. But it was like the Blue Jays were really good, and like the Orioles were really good, and like the Rays were like the doormat, but like they still could win 70-80 games a year. And you just look back at
the AL East right now. I know we're talking about the Yankees before, but like I just happened to look at the standings, and it was like, I believe, and I could be wrong here, like the Yankees would be like within a game and a half of first place in like four of six divisions, and instead they're in last place of the AL East, right? Which the Rays are obviously incredible right now, but even like, you know, we knew the Blue Jays were supposed to be good, but you know, I'm from Massachusetts, and it's like all I heard this offseason was like the Red Sox are an abomination, and they might be. I don't follow baseball that closely, right? But I happened to see on SportsCenter this morning they won like five straight games. I'm like, oh, I thought they were supposed to stink, right? Like this is weird how sports actually pan out.
Yeah, look, the AFC East is going to be interesting. I think New England is pretty clearly the worst roster, I would say. But I also think they had one of the better drafts. And I think they're still coached by Bill Belichick. And Mac Jones can't be as bad as he was last year. And I think, you know, I still think they're a weapon or two short. But they have added that, you know, they've gotten a little bit better there. The defense should be better. They kind of – Christian Gonzalez falling that far, I didn't foresee happening.
They're going to be a tough out at the very least, right? Like, I don't think if you look at even if they are the fourth place team in this division, which is how it feels right now, how many like last place teams do you say to yourself, perceived last place team, would you say to yourself, like, dang, like that's going to be tough. Like going and beating them is going to be a challenge, right? Yeah. Like it's a little bit different than if you look at like, what are the NFC West right now? Like be nice to play Arizona twice and maybe the Rams based off how things look right there right now, right? I mean, who scares you? Like if you plucked any AFC East team and put them in the NFC South, are they the favorites?
Yeah, easily. I would say easily, because they probably have, as much as people don't like Mac Jones, like he's probably what, the best quarterback in the NFC South or the second best with Derek Carr? Like,
Yeah, he's one of those guys we were talking about earlier where it's like, you know, they're a quarterback, they're in that gray area, right? Where like he hasn't proven yet that he's it. But he also is clearly, you know, he's not a write off, right? He's got to write the script though going forward. So those are good examples. I'm with you. It's context of the division is going to play a huge factor in how this AFC East is viewed, not even a year from now, but you know, 9 months from now when the NFL is in the in February and probably within 10 days of the Super Bowl.
And one thing before we get to the draft, and we kind of mentioned it there, but the schedule comes out, I guess, and you know, next week, I think the 11th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Shefty reported a week from today.
Yeah, the 11th. Yeah. The Jets we'll see what happens, but when they play teams, they have 10 of their 17 games are played in their home stadium. They only go out west twice, and that's just to Vegas and Denver, so they'd have no true West Coast trip. Yep. They play the NFC, so it's a lot of local stuff. I'm very curious how the schedule is going to break with primetime. This is a team that has not played. They played, you know,
every primetime game.
Yeah, they're going to play every. It's either going to be the prime 1 or 4 o'clock spot. They're going to play an 8 o'clock. Hopefully, it's more Sunday and Monday night games. Thursday night games are brutal to go to. They're brutal to prepare for.
They'll have one, my guess. Yeah. My guess is just
hopefully one. That'll be Houston's primetime game. Is there a game outside of the AFCs that the Jets have this year? Is it like a Jets Giants matchup? Is it Jets Eagles or a Chiefs? Like, is there a matchup to you that would be like, wow, this is my popcorn's ready, like TO level? Like, is there any matchups, Chiefs? Yeah.
No doubt, Chiefs. Only because we keep having this conversation about how they might stack up in the AFC East. And the real measuring stick of the conference is the Chiefs. We've won two of the past four championships. And the Chiefs have had an interesting offseason. Like, it's been good. It hasn't been, but it hasn't been like, okay, they did a bunch of moves that came out of nowhere. And like, you know, Philly's offseason, at least of late, feels like the rich getting richer, right? Even though they did lose Javon Hargrave, a bunch of players, right? Kaiser White, Javon Hargrave, they lost a ton of players in free agency. But that feels like years ago, right? They kept Darius Slay, and after it looked like they were going to release him. And same with James Bradbury. And then they obviously made the, you know, notable moves in the draft and trade for DeAndre Swift. For the Chiefs, it's just been like a business-like effort this offseason. You know, Juwan Taylor comes in, play right or left tackle. Donovan Smith now potentially replaces Orlando Brown Jr., but it's not like they, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster leaves in free agency and they sign or they draft Rashee Rice. Like, not a bunch of headlining moves from the Chiefs outside of Juwan Taylor, but they didn't need him. Like, they're just that good. And part of how they're going to get better is that they had this really good draft class last year that should be even better and more experienced this year. So that's the game that I have my eyes on. And I think, so that game is what I have my eyes on for the Chiefs. And then what I have my eyes on for the Jets, what I have my eyes on though, specific to the schedule, is the Jets are going to raid and they're going to be the, you know, one of the biggest tickets in town. They're going to play, I think the maximum allowable number
of prime time
is six. Yeah. I don't know if it's six pre-flex or if it's six post-flex, but whatever the maximum number is, I expect the Jets to get it. But I think what you don't need is you don't need Jets Chiefs in week one. I mean, that's a bad example because the Chiefs are playing at home no matter what in week one. But you don't need Jets Eagles in week one. You don't need it, right? Like Jets Eagles week one, that's like, you know, Alabama, you know, Clemson in week one of the college football season. You put Alabama against, you know, directional state and we'll watch it because they're Alabama, right? So I think Jets versus a, I don't know. I'm not saying they need to play the worst opponent on their schedule, but you know, Jets versus Commanders in week one, which they're a solid team. They almost made the playoffs last year, right? But like, that'll be the most watched game of the week, especially if they place it on Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. So that's what I have my eyes on for the Jets, is how does the early season slate look? Because I think, and this applies to all AFC teams. It's not, this is not specific to the Jets, but you know, there are teams that can play catch up, but we have seen the numbers suggest like a team that falls to like 0-3 early, that's going to be a really difficult hole to dig yourself out of. And that might be just as much tied to your schedule as it is your ability. You know, like if the Jets draw Buffalo, Philly, KC in weeks 1-3, right? Like maybe the three toughest games of their schedule the entire season. They could start 1-2 and all of a sudden the world would be falling or the sky would be falling. Or conversely, they could draw, you know, whatever, inferior foes and start 3-0. Meanwhile, Buffalo gets, you know, Kansas City and who else, whatever else, and they're 1-2. And it's like, wow, you know, like everything feels very different. So that's what I have my eyes on for the schedule in the AFC, is whose schedule on paper looks a little bit softer in September versus who has the gauntlet to go through in September that makes you think they might be out of it before they're actually in it.
Yeah. I wonder if your employer I wonder if your employer wastes Jets Giants on 9/11 to open the season, the biggest market.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah.
It's Monday night, it's 9/11. So I don't know. I'm not sure. Everyone assumes it's gonna be the opener game. Yeah, the opener, but I don't know. I feel like
because that game is in, I mean, it's
a Giants
away,
home game.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's another way to, you know, it's, you know, I'm not that the league is often as concerned about where the game is being played, but you know, Aaron Rodgers would open in the New York market, which that number would just, I mean, that would smash.
It'd be
incredible, right?
Yeah, I'm curious from the draft class perspective, because it felt like the more I've sat on it, the more I've gone, okay, you know, there's two guys they drafted that I transparently didn't watch because they were rumored to be UDFA guys, and I just, like, can only get through so many guys. I like Will McDonald.
Yeah.
Felt like maybe slightly a reach. Could still be a really good player, but kind of felt like a little bit of a luxury. Joe Tippmann pick made so much sense in this division, in this conference, as we talked about. You got to be able to protect your quarterback. You have Aaron Rodgers. I just felt like the draft overall was slightly underwhelming, but I can't tell if that's because I'm looking at it through a year ago. They drafted probably three of the seven best guys in the class, and it's like your expectation flips from – every Jets draft has always been, okay, can these guys come in and be superstars? Well, that happened. And now it's like reverting back to, you're a good team. This is about building depth. This is about building a roster that can last not just a year, but can last 3-4 years. Is that kind of how you took away from it? Because it feels like everyone's like, it's a B-. Like last year was like A+, best draft ever.
Well, this is what happens when you're no longer picking in the top five, right? I mean, this is a reality the Jets are going to have to deal with going forward. The Chiefs are in this. I was thinking about this with the Chiefs draft, because it's like back-to-back years where you're just – and a little bit less so last year because they had two first-round picks. But their drafts in recent seasons have not exactly moved the needle in some people's eyes. And you're like, well, when you're picking 31st and 63rd every year, like, it's a little bit more difficult to find blue-chip players like that. Like, blue-chip players generally are – I mean, there is one very obvious pipeline for what I would call Pro Bowl all pro caliber players. The top 15 picks of the draft. Like, just go back and look at them, and it's like, that's where you find them, right? Like, the Bosas don't get drafted in the third round, right? They get drafted in the first three picks. That's just how it goes. So for the Jets, I think part of what happened in this draft was that they aren't picking, you know, they aren't picking the top 8 or 10 picks, right? And Sauce and Garrett are guys that you knew were going to be very, very highly drafted. And then I'd say beyond that is, you know, the roster no longer has a bunch of needs, right? Like, it had a few needs. And I think a big reason why the draft is being perceived the way that it was is that people aren't viewing pass rusher as much of a need right now, which is fair in the sense that the Jets had a phenomenal defense last year. And who's the biggest defensive loss for them this offseason? If I said that to you, like,
Sheldon Rankins, the only starter. Right,
okay, that's a good one. Yeah, so Rankins would have been my answer.
Rankins and Joyner are the only two starters that aren't coming back.
Yeah, so Rankins, so you're like, all right, on the scale though of, like, you know, Rankins was obviously a very good player for them, but it's like, is he the seventh most important starter last year? Right, you just start to do the math, like, Q, JFM, you know, Sauce, like, Jordan Whitehead, you just go down the list, and it's like, all right, you know, Quincy and obviously. Also Mosley, like, yeah, maybe he's higher than seventh, but whatever. He's not top three. He's probably not bottom three either. The Jets defense was so good, and they basically kept the unit intact that you're not thinking defense much. The draft is also about what you need, not just this year, but going forward. And, you know, that cap situation is going to have to be addressed when Rodgers' deal is reassessed, because he's not, I mean, I'm here to tell you, he's not playing for $1.165 million this year, right? And they just signed Randall Cobb. You know, they're going to keep adding veterans. Like, we can joke about it all we want, but, like, I expect to one day have a Shefty tweet about Mercedes Lewis, right?
I would be shocked. I tweeted it the second that, I don't know, whoever it was. I think Diana had a tweet that was like, he's going to be the facility. I was like, it's weird how Mercedes Lewis and Randall Cobb posted videos working out for the first time all offseason. Shocker.
Oh, is that, did she tweet this morning?
No.
It
was when he was reporting like a week ago. I was like, Cobb is going to be signed within hours. Yeah. And then obviously it took a little longer, but the fact that he's coming to OTAs is a little shocking, but whatever. Good for him.
Different times, man. So anyways, back to, they're going to need some cap space here, and I don't know this for sure, but I think I've seen enough people wonder about Carl Lawson's future, right? What does that look like right now? So that's part of it, is that, like, they didn't have as much of a perceived need at D end or pass rusher right now. The second part of it is that they did have a big perceived need at offensive tackle, and the player that so many had linked to them, and really the last of the surefire offensive tackles in the first round, went, what, one pick or two picks? One pick ahead, Pittsburgh moved up.
Belichick got a – Belichick took a little less to a little less.
And so I think a little bit of a sting, right? Like, that the player that probably would have assuaged all the concerns along the offensive line goes one pick ahead of them, and it happens to be that the team who trades up, the Steelers, trades up with, you know, the Jets' most hated rival in the Patriots. So I think that's a big part of why the draft feels differently. And then also – small draft class, right? What was the draft? Wasn't the draft
It's six. They only had six guys, but, like, they traded back twice. Like, they have a ton of 6th and 7th round guys. So it's really three guys in that first four rounds is a small class.
So that's part of it too, right? And so I would say that, and I hate to, like, I think two things can be true. A lot of things can be true at the same time. I love mock drafts. I love draft grades. I view them as, like, almost exclusively for entertainment purposes, right? I don't hold people that have incorrect mock drafts or incorrect draft grades accountable, because a lot of things take place. A lot of things change. It's really hard to predict what's going to happen a month from now, much less, you know, 3 years down the road with this draft class. So as a result of that, while I consume a ton of draft grade content, I also, like, and maybe I'm wrong for doing this, I believe teams deserve the benefit of the doubt. You've got a massive scouting staff that worked 12 months to get ready for this draft class. I mean, from really actually, like, before the 2022 draft was over, they were already grinding away on the 2023 class. So somebody who spent 12 months studying Will McDonald said, hey, this guy can really help us. So I tried to, when a draft is over, yes, I read the grades and have a ton of fun with that, but I also say, all right, what was the logic behind this? So why are they taking a first round defensive end? Okay, so right now I don't think he's necessarily guaranteed to play a ton, but even if Carl Lawson stays this year, is he a guarantee to stay next year? Which that is, that's going to be the, he signed a 3-year deal. So he's going to be a free agent after this year. Well, what if Will McDonald's an every down player a year from now? Is anybody going to cry about it? No, of course they're going to be thrilled about having a guy like Will McDonald. And Joe Douglas has had a very atypical Joe Douglas offseason because of the Aaron Rodgers trade. He is a draft and develop GM. And I know that every GM, not every, but a lot of GMs are assigned that label, but like, you know, like less need, right? Like these are guys who are not, you know, and Howie Roseman, like they have more sort of like unconventional methods they are unafraid to attack, right? So in terms of draft, building the roster. So I look at it, I look at the offseason in some ways as like a reflection of like other forces at work here, like A, the pressure for needing a quarterback. I'm sure the owner really would like the quarterback to not be, you know, a sort of on the fence veteran or Zach Wilson. So I felt like that was a Joe Douglas type pick where, so I think if I'm a Jets fan, I'm taking solace in the fact that like the GM who's done a really good job building this roster probably picked the kind of guy that he would exactly want. I would love to see the draft video. If I don't know if they have it or not, if they've released it of like the minutes leading up to the pick, because I think it'd be fascinating to see like, what was their reaction when the Steelers traded up to 14? Were they preparing to take Broderick Jones? Were they trying to get ahead of the Patriots? Because Patriots had a perceived need at left tackle too. And was it like, hey, were they thinking Will McDonald before the trade up by Pittsburgh? Were they not? That would be an interesting video to see. Have they released anything? And I missed it.
It'll be out. I think it comes out in 2 weeks. They do like, it's like flight 23 this year instead of one Jets 5. Yeah. No, I think what was interesting is, anyone you asked in the Jets building, I asked after the draft, was like, we're so pumped to get Will McDonald. I know everyone says that, but it wasn't like, it didn't, they're like, listen, this guy is an elite level athlete, led the country in sacks 2 years ago, was played out of position. They played him as a 4-eye. He's clearly a wide nine guy. He's 238 pounds and things like that.
Yeah.
And then the thing that I thought was two things that I thought were really interesting with the McDonald pick was, one, Kuiper mocked him in the top 10 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago. And nobody like paid attention to it. Because he wasn't mocked, to your point, which I actually didn't really think about until just now, fans associate mock drafts with like, oh, the team's going to draft this guy here.
Yeah.
And the Jets didn't get mocked Will McDonald ever. So everyone's like,
totally.
Who the fuck is this guy? Why is he out? Like, where did this come from? In reality, I think that if it's just people didn't assume edge rusher and, oh, Will McDonald, maybe it's Van Ness or maybe it's a Nolan Smith. Nolan Smith fell another 15 picks. So it wasn't just the Jets didn't view him clearly as highly.
Yeah.
And the thing with McDonald, like, and Carl Lawson, you mentioned, Carl Lawson every other year seems to get hurt. And they were really lucky last year.
Yeah, popped 6.5 sacks last year?
Yeah, popped Achilles 2 years ago, three or four years ago, torn his ACL, 5 years. Like, unfortunately, these things happen. There's certain players that unfortunately get hurt. And you have to be guarded against that. Last year, the Jets got crushed down the stretch where guys started to get hurt. The offensive line got banged up and Zach Wilson stunk. And it was like, we went from 7-4, surefire playoff team to losing six in a row, benching, playing Chris Trevor on primetime. I wanted to quickly ask you about a couple of a couple of fantasy questions, obviously. The Jets are kind of an interesting test case for how this is going to work. I guess you could kind of base off the Packers stuff from the, you know, 2020 and 2021, similar, you know, a lot of similar guys or similar play styles at Garrett Wilson. Maybe he isn't Devontae Adams yet, but he has very similar play style. He's obviously a very good player and put up big numbers with his red zone numbers for anybody, by the way, with and without Zach Wilson is quite hysterical to look at.
He was like fourth in red zone in like end zone targets and had four receiving touchdowns. Like that doesn't add up, right?
It was ugly.
83 catches on 149 targets. Like I haven't done the math recently, but at one time I remember looking at like, again, it's not a him stat. It's a quarterback stat, but it was like, 147 targets. It was one of the least efficient like catch rates in the league. Again, not because of Garrett Wilson, right? I don't recall him having like significant drop issues last year. So it was quarterback play. That's what happened.
Yeah. No, there's literally one drop and he came back and caught a game winning touchdown. So I'll give him some slack on that. But I wanted to ask you I wanted to go like running back, receiver, tight end quickly.
Let's do it. Yep.
Running back is really interesting. I like Izzy Abakanya, however you're going to – I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I have to figure that out before he comes
fast.
On.
How's that? He's fast.
Yeah, he's fast. His last name. Michael Carter had a really bad year last year.
Yeah.
Like really bad. Like, was just bad at everything. And unfortunately, was good as a rookie and then all of a sudden fell off a cliff. Brees Hall, I don't know. Like, I just don't know what to expect because he was so good. But I don't think the Jets want to rush him back. And what if they – there's no need to. And also – I know it's annoying from a fantasy perspective, but the first couple weeks of the year, like the Jets might say, you're going to get 10 to 15 reps. Like he's, I don't see him getting 20 carries anytime in the first half of the season. I think they're going to try to ramp it up. So I guess, how's the running back room in the Jets shake out? Because there's a lot of guys and there's one superstar, but superstars hurt.
Well, a couple of factors are contributing to Breece Hall's ranking is, first of all, everything you laid out, right? That even if he is medically clear to play in week one, I don't expect him to play a ton in week one. I expect him to be judiciously used in the first month, maybe 2 months of the season. Second of all, and I think this is very human of us, but in fantasy football especially, we have this really bad recency bias where we do things based exclusively off of what happened last year as opposed to prior years. One that did happen last year in a major way, and other years too, is the post-ACL recovery club proved that you need a full year before you're back to your normal self. The best example that I think is relevant to Breece Hall is Saquon Barkley off of his ACL, where it was like he comes back and he was good, but not like you should be drafting him in the first five picks good, which is where Saquon will be in, or has been and will be in other years. So for Breece, that's the big challenge is, does he come back and go back and just look at a few guys that came off of an ACL tear last year? Robert Woods, who took a big step back, part of that's the offense. Chris Godwin, who averaged like 8.8 yards per catch. At one point, he was at like 15.1
yards
per catch.
He was just like a bubble screen guy.
Yeah, it was all he was. Now, part of that was definitely the offense, right? Like they couldn't protect you and I. Brady was getting the ball out the second the ball was snapped, basically. But still, 8.8 yards per catch for a guy that was at one point in his career for a full season over 15 yards. Like that's a very different Chris Godwin. So maybe he bounces back a little bit this year. Maybe not because of the quarterback play, but at least he looks different. So that's the big question I have with Breece Hall. So what I did was I tentatively rated him at running back 19 overall. We have our rankings that are available on ESPN, obviously. I keep a document just at all times, just of like, not just where they're ranked, but like some notes. Hey, had whatever, 15 plus carries in 12 of his 17 games, you know, led the NFL in touches per game or whatever the various notes are, right? And I've got two players that are highlighted in big, bold yellow, which are Breece Hall and Javonte Williams. Williams definitely more disconcerting because it sounds like Javonte Williams might be out maybe half the season this year. Who knows? They've been very non-committal now about the beginning of the season, and that was a very complex injury. On the scale of ACL tears, Breece's was much more sort of just right down the middle. Like that was, it was a clean ACL tear, if you will. And not to mitigate it, it's obviously significant, but should be back, you know, on a general timeline that is associated with an ACL tear and the recovery. So a little bit less concerned about his versus Javonte Williams, but I can't control how much the Jets use him. If he was healthy, I'd expect him to use him 20-ish touches per game. So in different circumstances, he'd probably be like RB8 or 9. I've got him down 10 spots just to account for what we don't know right now, a little bit of a hedge on Breece Hall.
Yeah, no, I think it's probably a smart move. Plus, it's kind of hard to – the Packers ran the ball, and the Aaron Jones obviously was incredibly productive with Aaron Rodgers, but it's just hard to tell, like – We haven't seen it yet. So it's just, you kind of almost have to hedge. I want to go to tight end and we'll finish with the receiver, because I think receiver is honestly super interesting with the amount of bodies. Tight end is another one where it's a lot of guys. LeJay Dusable said the other day, he's like, he expected Tyler Conklin to be a top seven tight end in terms of fantasy. I don't know if I like Tyler Conklin a lot. He's a friend of the show. We'll see what happens, but I understand the concept of Robert Tonyan, same quarterback 2 years ago, who I think Conklin's a better player than, had 10 touchdowns, got used in the red zone a ton. And like Conklin last year was like every game felt like it was five or six targets.
Yeah.
Some of them were kind of wasted though. So I guess, where's this Jets tight end room shake out? Because it's like, it's a solid room. It's a very expensive room considering all things. But where's that shake out? Because the tight end position, it feels like, and not just in fantasy, but in real, and like the actual game, there's like six or seven elite guys. And then everyone else is like, any given week, they could look awesome.
Yeah, hard for me to get too excited about anybody in fantasy from the tight end room right now because of a couple of the rules that I generally follow. If you have two legit investments in a tight end, it's pretty rare for me to have both of them inside my rankings. Conklin was like right on the periphery of my top 25 of tight ends. You're right, he was solid last year. I felt like sometimes that was because the Jets were just limited elsewhere, and there was just the path of least resistance was short throws, Tyler Conklin in the middle of the field. I would think TJ Uzama has a more pronounced role this year, and We don't know what this Jets receiver slash tight end room will look like once it's all finalized, because what yesterday the Randall Cobb signing was announced, and I know we can joke about it, but like there's a chance they keep adding, whether it's former Packers like Mercedes Lewis or just people that have an interest in playing with Aaron Rodgers. So I would say Conklin and Uzama probably kind of cancel each other out enough that I think there are, while the tight end position is not deep, I think there are better options that can be weekly starters for you that provide more upside.
Yeah, I think the Jets are going to be like a week-by-week matchup of like, oh, the Jets are playing Houston, and we looked early on in the year, Rodgers is feeding tight ends. Like,
He'll have his moments, no doubt, right? It's just a tight end what you're looking for. You have to make a decision. Are you going to live with the guy that one week might have 17 points and the next week might have 2.5? Or are you going to want the guy that is going to feed you 9.5 points per game, but it's like never more than 12 and never fewer than 7? And that's the decision, a dance with the devil, so to speak.
Unfortunately, everyone gets caught in. I want to finish with receiver. The Jets receiver room is really interesting to me. I think I saw some tweets yesterday how the Jets got slow at receiver. Spare me. They signed Mecole Hardman, who's one of the four fastest dudes in the league. Garrett Wilson's a 4.3 guy. I just don't really see them being slow. Like, I think Lazard's not fast and Corey Davis isn't a burner. If you want to include Denzel Mims, he's a 4.3 guy. Randall Cobb's still a good athlete. Even if his legs are obviously not, 2012 Cobb. Where do you see the Jets receiver room? Because I don't want to misquote you here, because I feel like you got misquoted on a quote with Garrett Wilson. I don't know if you said he was receiver one or whatever. There was some type of like thing about how Garrett Wilson should have a monster year. I guess, like, where do you stand with Garrett Wilson and like, Rodgers doing the Devontae stuff? It's like it's exciting, but it's also like, I almost feel bad because I'm like, dude, I don't know. It's hard to expect you to have 1,700 yards and 20 touchdowns next year. Like, I think that might be a little generous in year two. We'll see.
Wait, by the way, that's outside of the projections for any of our wide receivers for this year. Like, I don't project Justin Jefferson to have 1,700 yards this year. I just don't. Like, a really good projection would be like 1,400 yards and like 10 or 11 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's what I think as
A few guys will get there, by the way. But that'd be like a really strong projection for any player at the tight end, at the wide receiver spot. So Garrett Wilson was wide receiver 21 in total points last year with, if not the worst, one of the five worst quarterback situations amongst all elite receivers in the NFL. We talked about 83 catches on 147 targets. That target number could decrease by 15 and go to 132, and the catch number could go up by 7 or 8, right? So I expect there to be much better efficiency, and red zone proficiency should be much better. 4 receiving touchdowns last year for Garrett Wilson, but he was very high up there. I don't have the number on me, which I should, but his end zone target number was really high. Like, it was like top, I think it was like top 10. So for him to have that many looks and convert that few last year was much more about the quarterback play than it was him. So I've got him as wide receiver 11. He's the trendiest, and he was my pick for breakout wide receiver of the year. I know he was the offensive rookie of the year, but that was with a very porous quarterback situation. There are very few reasons to not be extremely excited about Garrett Wilson this year. Probably the best argument against Garrett Wilson would simply be because Lazard's already there and Randall Cobb is there and maybe others, maybe Aaron just has a stronger rapport out of the gates with those guys. That's not nearly strong enough of an argument for me to really move off of my stance. Generally speaking, an elite talent supplants a good rapport with somebody. And so I'm going to bank on this being a Garrett Wilson. I'm sorry if people don't agree with this term because he won Offensive Rookie of the Year last year, but I'm going to call it the Garrett Wilson breakout year. I've talked about breakouts recently, and I want to remind people it's a very subjective term, right? Because there's no dictionary definition. You have to have fewer than 700 receiving yards and get over 1,200 receiving yards to be a breakout. No, I just mean it takes a big step forward as a player. And based off of everything we saw last year in those circumstances, a lot of reasons to believe that better days are ahead. And Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson should be best friends sooner rather than later.
Yeah, look, I think the way you phrase it there, he had a really nice year last year. I think that there was some weeks where he looked awesome, generally where it's Mike White or Joe Flacco playing, he got fed a ton of targets. The Cleveland game, the Bears game, the Vikings game, those stand out. The problem is there was also other games where it was like, Jesus Christ, he had 11 targets and 2 catches for 31 yards, and it's like he should have had 2 or 3 touchdowns. It's frustrating whether you're a fan, you're watching film the next day, fantasy, it doesn't matter. It was like, this guy is, there's a lot left out there. And that's
my greatest fear for the Bucs this year.
Didn't even start. My greatest fear
for the Bucs receivers. Yeah, I know, crazy, right? That's what I don't want for the Bucs this year. I don't want to have Chris Godwin and Mike Evans rostered on a couple teams and have weeks where it's like, oh, There goes Mike Evans, 2 catches on 9 targets for 32 yards and 0 touchdowns. But I don't know what to expect right now with a quarterback competition made up of Kyle Trask and Baker Mayfield. Like, that doesn't inspire a ton of confidence.
My my Uber driver at the Senior Bowl would disagree with you. He said Kyle Trask is the best quarterback in the league. Not surprised.
Was it Kyle's father?
No, it was somebody that may have been related to Kyle Trask. And
yeah,
clearly from
University of Florida grad.
Yeah, clearly a Florida grad. And he also said Steve Spurrier is better than Saban. So that guy's a legend.
All right. Definitely a Florida grad.
Yeah. Wanted to ask you one quick question before we hop off here. Obviously, last year we kind of mentioned with the Jets rookies, a guy like Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson broke out in terms of fantasy. They end up having a really nice year. I know that probably it's Bijan because it's like he's a running back, but it feels like that's kind of the obvious pick. Is there anyone outside of Bijan, I guess, who you're expecting like – is probably going to finish pretty high, you know, in the top 25, I guess, or, you know, wherever Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall finished last year in terms of fantasy. Like, is there any rookie that sides Bijan? Because, I don't know, they got 1,000 yards out of Tyler Allgeier and Cordell Patterson.
Yeah. Yeah, I always wonder if fans sometimes prefer the analyst who always has the outside-the-box answer,
or it's just
if
Bijan.
They just appreciate the answer from the analyst that's obvious and expected. So Bijan is the answer for sure, but Jahmyr Gibbs is not far behind, and Gibbs was a curious case in the pre-draft process because there were people that I talked to in the scouting community that were like, I don't understand why you're not talking about him more. And the best answer that I got was Bijan is just such a superlative prospect that at the running back position that everybody else felt a little bit less significant. I'm not saying Jahmyr Gibbs from a full body of work and skill set standpoint is Bijan, but he's a darn good player. Like, way, way better than any other running back in this year's class other than Bijan Robinson. And fantasy football, I know everybody who is listening that plays it already knows this, but just as a reminder, catching passes is such a cheat code for running backs. And if I had to guess, Jahmyr Gibbs has a real shot to be a top 10 receiver amongst all running backs right out of the gates. He doesn't need 1,000 rushing yards. He could have 700 rushing yards. He could have 500 rushing yards. But if he pushes for 60 or even 70 catches, he'll be extremely valuable. And I'm sure you studied him during the pre-draft process. But for those that didn't, just go back and watch him at Georgia Tech. Watch him at Alabama. The guy was the best pass catcher in Alabama's offense by a mile last year. His Georgia Tech days, that was a different offense, obviously. But he was awesome as a runner, awesome as a receiver. He was awesome as a return man as well. He's an uber athlete, and if the Lions don't get him involved in the passing game a lot, I'd be very surprised, because while DeAndre Swift clearly was not in full favor there in Detroit, he was a very busy pass catcher these past couple of seasons.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anyone saw the anyone saw the video of Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell celebrating this year,
fired up.
I was like, wow, DeAndre Swift must be, I don't know who he murdered in that building, but they are cannot wait to get him out of there.
I don't know if it's all tweets, but it says like translate this tweet when it looks like it's not English on the English language. If you're on the English version of Twitter, like if you could translate this tweet, it basically was Brad saying to DeAndre, good riddance, right? Like, how did the damn good riddance? Which team do you want to go play for?
I was interested that there's the Jets rumor that they were going to take him at 15. I've heard more it's a rumor than it was truth, but that would have been incredibly interesting to have a Jets offensive Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, and Jahmyr Gibbs.
That's interesting.
I don't know. Felt like it was a little bit more like the Lions wanted some validation of why they took him at 12.
That's my initial reaction.
Ben Johnson's an elite offensive coordinator. He's a guy that has found creative ways to get the ball in guys' hands. Jamal Williams, obviously, last year.
Yep. You know,
basically 10 carries for 20 yards and 4 touchdowns a game. But I obviously appreciate you taking some time to hop on.
Of course,
it's obviously exciting time to be living in the Northeast. Well, you know, some Jets, Pats. Maybe we get Jets, Pats week one. That'll do some big numbers as well. Make sure you guys are obviously, you know, a lot more followers than me. So I assume people are following you already on Twitter, but NFL Live, you know, daily, I'm pretty sure. Obviously you got fantasy football stuff and a million other things. Make sure you guys are tuned in and following some good work. We appreciate you hopping on.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me on, and can't wait for a week from right now. We'll finally have that schedule, the much-anticipated 2023 slate.